77 WABC. The following program does not necessarily reflect the views of WABC Radio.
The following program is brought to you by NYU Winthrop Hospital. It's the weekend. Be good to yourself. It's Katz's Corner with Dr. Aaron Katz, where you get simple, straightforward answers to your questions about health, from diet and supplements to lifestyle changes. To reach Dr. Katz, call 800-848-WABC. Now, live on 77 WABC, it's the chairman of urology at NYU Winthrop Hospital in New York. Here is Dr. Aaron Katz.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Katz's Corner here on WABC Radio in New York. I'm your host, Dr. Aaron Katz, and we are live. 1-800-848-WABC is the number. The number again is 1-800-848-9222. Good morning, everyone. So glad that you could join me. Looks sunnier out here than what they had told us earlier. I thought it was going to rain the whole day. But right now, it's not a bad start here in New York. And this morning I will have on a wonderful guest. I'm going to get to him in a moment, but I just wanted to give you all a few announcements because, as you know, well, you may not know, but Prostate Cancer Awareness Month is in September. And, of course, prostate cancer is the number one cancer in men still. Over 250,000 men will still be diagnosed this year. The most common risk factors for prostate cancer are men with a family history, African-American men, men who were down at the World Trade Center who were first responders, and those men that had fought in Vietnam and exposed to Agent Orange, as well as other lifestyle things like diet and stress and things that are not well studied, but certainly I've seen them as risk factors for prostate cancer in my own practice. So we are continuing to do a number of screenings in September for prostate cancer. And on September 4th, our fifth consecutive year, we're going to partner with Senator Kempanen, and we'll do blood tests and a digital rectal exam. This will take place at the Winthrop Urology Office in Garden City in Long Island from 5 to 7 o'clock. This one you do have to register for beforehand, 516-739-1700. And then we're also going to participate in the very large event, the car show, the annual car show, the Long Island Cruisin' for a Cure, with our good friend Sandy Kane. This will take place on September 16th at 1400 Old Country Road in Westbury, Long Island. And that's from 9 o'clock in the morning to 3 o'clock. You don't have to register, but this year we have one of our patients donated a beautiful plasma screen TV, and we'll be doing a free prize drawing for all those that participate in the screening. So that's on September 16th. And then on September 29th, we're going to partner with Senator Elaine Phillips. And in addition to providing PSA tests, we're going to have an educational seminar presented by myself on prostate cancer prevention, and that will take place at NYU Winthrop Research and Academic Center. And that one you do have to register. That's on September 29th, 8:30 in the morning to 11 o'clock in the morning. And you can easily register, 516-746-5924. That number again is 516-746-5924. So a number of great events for prostate cancer screening. And I hope to see you all there. Or your loved ones, please let people know that I do believe that the PSA, although not perfect, is still the best screening test for prostate cancer today, and should be done annually, starting at least at the age of probably around 50, 55 is the current recommendations by the AUA. But if you have one of those risk factors, I think probably a few years earlier, starting in maybe even in your mid-40s, you should have PSA, and it's been clearly detects early-stage prostate cancer. This morning, we have a wonderful guest on Katz's Corner. I know him very well for a number of years at NYU Winthrop, Dr. Ed Rubin. Ed Rubin is the Director of Chronic Pain Management here at NYU Winthrop, and he's going to talk to us this morning about some new ways of treating pain as well as depression. So I'm very interested to hear that. And he's helped me. I don't know if he remembers, but a number of years ago, I had a back spasm and I went to him in his office, a wonderful staff. And he's really an outstanding physician and very busy practitioner here in Nassau County. Sees a lot of men and women with chronic pain. Good morning, Dr. Rubin. How are you?
Good morning. Nice to talk to you.
Oh, good to hear from you. Yes. I know that we both do procedures at the NYU Winthrop, the Zeckendorf, and I know you, whenever I see you on the schedule, you've got some, it's amazing how many people that you treat in one day there. I mean, sometimes, over 20 or 30 patients, right, in one day there.
Yeah, I mean, chronic back pain being as prevalent as it is, it's a very common diagnosis these days, especially as the population is aging.
Yes. Yeah, so is that the main reason that people come to you for back pain?
So the majority of our practice is, you know, chronic back and neck pain, and we do the injections, spinals, epidurals, and those kind of nerve blocks to help treat the pain. But we do run into patients that kind of go beyond what we can fix with interventions. And now with the push to get away from opioids on these patients, we're looking for new ways to treat people that are less dependent on the medications.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I do remember the... clearly, we're trying to get away from the opioids, but some people really need them, right? I mean, some people just, you know, you have this acute onset of back pain, you get out of the car, next thing you know, you got a back spasm. I mean, I remember that's what happened to me. I mean, I could barely get out of the car, you know, and you need some temporary relief. And I know we're all concerned about writing these prescriptions for opioids because you don't want patients to get addicted, but some people really need it.
I do agree with that statement, and there is the role for opioids, especially in the acute setting, to try and get people through the initial pain. But long-term is where it gets a little dicey. You know, we don't have good long-term evidence on the opioids, especially at higher doses. And, you know, frankly, we may have been trained incorrectly over the years. 10 years ago, we were told, you know, just increase the dose until the patient's comfortable. What we're finding out now is that less is more, and that using them initially could be reasonable, but as a long-term treatment modality, you know, there's the issue with dependence and becoming addicted to the medication. So that's why it's very important for us to have these interventional techniques. And now with the infusion therapy options for treatments that don't leave people dependent on medication.
Yeah, I mean, you do see a lot of people with back pain, you know, chronic, acute. What are your thoughts about, you know, the doctor that was very famous, Dr. Sarno, about a lot of it being in your mind, and then you control it, I guess, with your mind over matter, and you don't need medication. Is there any truth to his work and to his beliefs there, in your experience?
I would disagree with Dr. Sarno's premise that, you know, a lot of it is in people's heads. There needs to be a look at the bigger picture of the other life stressors and anxiety and things that kind of ramp up the pain. So there is some merit to looking at the bigger picture of what's going on in the person's life that could be making the pain exacerbate. But in general, I mean, these are real neurons firing and causing, you know, people to have distress and discomfort. There's medical, physiological reasons that people are having the pain, and it's not fair to just kind of dismiss it as all in people's heads. So if
yeah.
That book helps people to manage their pain, great, but to say that, you know, people shouldn't have access to or should give up, you know, all other treatments and just focus on the cognitive behavioral part, I think is just too much in one direction.
Now, as we get older, I mean, everybody, not everybody, but I know a lot of people wake up with pain. And what was concerning to me is that I had this acute pain, and then it started, I felt it, you know, radiating down into my lower back, into my butt, down my legs. And then I realized, you know what, this is not just normal. And then I kind of stepped it up. I saw you. You ordered an MRI, and there was some disc bulging there. And then we treated it, luckily, conservatively. But, you know, the next step would have been to go to the epidural. But I guess what my question is when do you know, if you're a listener out there and you have back pain, which is so common, when should you see somebody like yourself, who's the director of chronic pain management here at NYU Winthrop? When should you make that phone call to your office?
So where I come into play is around the 4 to 6 week mark. So mm-hmm. a lot of people have an acute strain, lumbar strain, and physical therapy is the initial treatment, anti-inflammatories, muscle relaxers. It's really bad. We would consider an opioid, but again, we're trying to get that out of the treatment pathway as much as possible. But where I come into play is around 4 to 6 weeks. At that point, you're going beyond the acute phase and at risk of going into a chronic situation. So that's where someone like myself would do an epidural or a nerve block to try and settle things down at the source.
And is that done? And you get an MRI first? Is that what you should do?
So, almost all of my patients are coming in with imaging by the time they get to me. It's really important that we have at least an MRI or a CAT scan if you have metal in your body and you can't get an MRI.
Okay.
So that imaging piece is what I need to put the puzzle together between the patient's pain and what we see there.
Okay.
But you have to be careful. I could take 100 people off the street with no pain, and 30 of them will have MRIs. You know, they look worse than the person sitting in front of me. So it's about putting the patient's symptoms and the pattern of the pain together with what we see on MRI, but not every disc bulge on MRI is necessarily a pain generator.
So that's right.
It's about trying to figure out what matches with the patient's pain and targeting at that spot.
Now, some doctors, I understand, do these injections in the office, but I see you do them in an ambulatory center. I think you put patients out under anesthesia first. What's the deal there? I mean, what's going on there? I mean, because you use some imaging during the procedure, right, to actually see it rather than just doing it in an office.
Right. So by coming to the NYU Winthrop outpatient facility, you know, we have the best imaging equipment. We have top-notch staff. Actually, about 60% of my patients do it awake, so it's just local anesthesia to the area of the back. The people that are being sedated are usually because the procedures are more involved, more than one or two needles, or are just anxious and need to be given something to help them relax for the injection. But we have an awake option of doing it, but the reason I choose to come to the facility is because when you have it done there, you're being held to the standard of the hospital in terms of, you know, my credentialing, in terms of the equipment that's being used, in terms of where the medications are being ordered from. In an office setting, you can safely provide these injections with imaging, but it's really up to the practitioner to keep their standards up and not cut corners on equipment and medication. So it's important that if you are doing them in an office that you know that the person who's doing them is following accredited standards.
If you're just joining us here on Cancer's Corner, we're talking with Dr. Edward Rubin, who is the Director of Chronic Pain Management at NYU Winthrop Hospital. And he has a large patient practice. He does an outstanding job. And he's also recently started, I wanted to ask you about this, Dr. Rubin, about some of the newer ways of treating chronic pain with infusion therapy, with some anesthetic, a medication called ketamine. I don't know exactly how you, ketamine. So tell us about this.
So ketamine is a medication that's been around for decades, and oftentimes you hear about these medications that have been around for a long time and they find another use. A common example would be aspirin. 40 years ago, people just took aspirin for headaches, and now everybody's on aspirin because it protects their heart. So there's a lot of medications out there where we find a new purpose for an old medication. Ketamine is an anesthetic drug used mainly in the operating room to put people to sleep under anesthesia. But it binds to a receptor that none of the other opioid medications are able to hit. And in doing so, it's able to relieve people with chronic pain. And as a bonus, we found that it also treats depression. So there's a whole segment of people that are not in pain, just with depression, that are getting ketamine treatments as well. It's really? Given in an office setting as an infusion. So patients come in and literally just sit in a lounge chair for an hour with an IV. It's done with a nurse monitoring the patient, EKG, blood pressure, oxygen monitor. So it's done in a safe setting. And what it does is it resets the pain pathway and shifts the balance from that chronic pain state back to the acute pain state where the treatments will work better.
All right, well, that last part was interesting. But so this is an old medication now that people are starting to use. This is something relatively new to use ketamine for this, right? In the office setting?
This has only started to be implemented in the last couple years. The one specific diagnosis with the most evidence is called complex regional pain syndrome, which is a neurological condition that people usually develop after a trauma or possibly after a surgery. So that's where the evidence first started, and they saw that they were also getting significant improvements in people's mood and then curing them from depression. So this is evidence-based, driven from the literature. And as an anesthesiologist, with the proper monitoring, it can be safely done in the office as an infusion at levels lower than what you would get for anesthesia in the operating room. So these are much, lower doses than what you would give someone for an operation.
And have you've been doing this? You've started already doing this in your practice?
Yeah, we had several dozen treatments already. We opened about in May, but I partnered with a company called Calypso, who's done about 3,000 of these down in Texas. But the niche for this particular infusion treatment are people that you would classify as really chronic, difficult to treat pain. So what I'm telling referring physicians is, give me your toughest cases and let's see if we can tackle them with the infusion therapy and get them back to a place of functioning, in their lives in a more productive way.
What about pain from cancer? What about, bone pain or back pain or other body part pain if you have some underlying malignancy? Well, is that something you would treat as well?
Right. I mean, assuming the patient, heart and lung are in good condition, then the answer is yes. So there can be some sedative effects with the ketamine. So you want to make sure somebody's heart and lung function is reasonable before you sedate them. But yes, ketamine treats pain anywhere. It's being used more and more in the operating room for very painful procedures. Many people aren't even aware because they're under anesthesia that we're adding in these kinds of medications to help treat their pain long term after surgery. So it's been useful mostly in the spine surgery world to really help the patients after surgery to have less pain as they recover.
And what does the patient feel? I mean, so you're giving them, they're coming to your office, they either have pain or pain and depression. I guess a lot of times patients, I can imagine if you're in chronic pain, you're going to have depression. I mean, it has to be awful to wake up every day and have pain. So it has to be, those two have to work hand in hand, I would think. But so, and then there's patients you're saying that you treat with this that don't have pain, that just have depression for other various reasons. So you give them the infusion. What are they, they're lying there, they're getting this infusion. I'm just trying to imagine this. What is the patient feeling? Are they feeling like twilighted? Are they hallucinating?
It's a twilight kind of experience. we mix the ketamine with a little bit of a relaxing medication, a benzodiazepine, which makes you feel calm and takes away any anxiety.
Sounds nice.
Yeah. So the technical
Where do I sign up for that? Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
The technical term would be they're in a twilight kind of dissociative state. So they are out of it, but they're being supervised. And then we turn the infusion off. Within 30 minutes, they're back to themselves when the medication effects on the brain wear off. But what we're seeing is a long-term blockage of the pain receptors, initially for weeks and then with repeat infusions up to months. So people do graduate from this and then go on for many months with significantly reduced pain.
So you say, so there's no hallucination, or you can hallucinate?
They can hallucinate. So we warn patients ahead of time that, you can see things, you can feel out of it. Again, we try and temper that with a bit of a cocktail of medications to keep people calm and relaxed. But people will report seeing things. But they're in a monitored setting. If any reason they're not feeling well, you just turn it off. And
I assume you have to come with someone, right? You can't just drive home.
Of course. No, you have to have a ride home. This is basically getting an anesthesia-type medication. This is for the really tough-to-treat cases. So
I see.
Someone where, 4 weeks of low back pain, you would say, hey, come in and get an infusion. This is, for the very, very difficult cases. I've had two back surgeries. I've tried an implant in my spine. The pain's still not controlled. And we're using this to help people get off opioids. That's one of the big reasons behind it. So if you're on, heavy-duty opioid regimens, because 10 years ago that's what we did, now you're kind of stuck on this opioid regimen and you're married to it to function, just tapering people down doesn't leave them with a treatment for their pain. Sounds good, just stop taking opioids, but what are you replacing that with that can actually let people continue to function and manage their pain? And that's where this can fit in to help people cut the opioids down, because you're basically blocking the pain from a different mechanism.
Well, this is really fascinating information, Dr. Rubin. Dr. Rubin is the Director of Chronic Pain Management at NYU Winthrop Hospital. If people want to contact you, Dr. Rubin, what would be the best way?
516-492-3100 is our office number. That's 516-492-3100. Or if you Google Ed Rubin, MD, you'll find me pretty easily.
Ed Rubin, MD. Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us here on Katz's Corner, Dr. Rubin. So if you have chronic pain or a loved one or someone that that's been battling this, certainly back pain or it sounds like all generalized pain can be treated with this new compound, this anesthetic in the office, ketamine, or of course going to the old standard ways, I guess, which is the epidurals or other modalities there in your practice.
Correct.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Rubin. I appreciate you coming on Katz's Corner. Have a wonderful day. We have a few gentlemen on the line that I guess are interested in a question still on prostate enlargement. So we have a few minutes left on Katz's Corner. Dan has been holding from New Jersey. Good morning, Dan. How are you? Danny on the line? Okay. I guess he's not there. Hello? Okay, well, I guess not. If he calls back, then let me know. At the beginning of the show, I did announce that we are having a number of screenings for prostate cancer using the PSA. If you're interested, you certainly can give us a phone call, because Prostate Cancer Awareness Month is September. And we do some great events locally here at the Medical Center at NYU Winthrop. We're going to join with Senator Kampanen. And he's going to provide both a PSA blood test and a digital rectal examination. That'll take place at Winthrop Urology Office in Garden City from 5 to 7 o'clock at night on September 4th. And then you can call and register at 516-739-1700. And then, again, we're going to be working with Sandy Kane and the Long Island Cruisin' for a cure to provide free blood tests there. It's a fantastic show. Many of the guys have been there time and year and year after, and it's just a great event. There's some terrific cars there, and this year we are going to raffle off a very large plasma screen TV. I don't know the exact size of it, but I know it's a wonderful event for sure, and that will be at 1400 Old Country Road in Westbury, Long Island. The annual car show there on September 16th. You don't have to register for that one, but we'll get you more information about that as it gets closer. And then we're also joining with Senator Elaine Phillips. And with Dr. Phillips and her campaign, we'll be providing free blood tests and an educational seminar. That will be here on campus at the NYU Winthrop Research and Academic Center in Mineola, Long Island, from 8:30 in the morning to 11 on September 29th. So registration is required there. 516-746-5924. There's been, of course, there's a lot of controversy about PSA screening. But, you know, I can't tell you how often I've seen men that are young in their 40s as well as men that are older in their 80s, you know, and I continue to screen for prostate cancer, even in men in their 80s that, you know, and I inform patients about the blood test and, but men who are, you know, active and they're otherwise healthy and they, want to, you know what their numbers are and they want to know what their PSA is. And, you know, I can't tell you every week we see men, that come in that didn't get a PSA for a few years and now the PSA is very high. So a gentleman this week I can think about right now who, you know, his PSA was 4 or 5 a few years ago. He didn't have a PSA for a couple of years. He came in, his PSA was 25. And unfortunately, the biopsy was done and showed very aggressive cancer, and it looks like it may have spread outside the prostate, which is no longer a curable situation if it goes outside the prostate and can spread to other organs. And we were just talking to Dr. Ed Rubin, who I really want to thank him again for coming on the show. You know, I mean, men can present with back pain and bone pain from prostate cancer, especially if the PSA is going too high. That's an indicator that the cancer is spreading and it's getting outside of the prostate. So you need to know your numbers and you need to get in earlier and earlier. And I think, you know, the guidelines right now from the American Urological Association is to get a PSA between 55 and 69. You know, if you're coming to my office, and again, a lot of the men come to the office not just for screening, but because they're having some urinary issues, some symptoms of, you know, which it's likely if you're having urinary symptoms, it's not necessarily from prostate cancer. It could be just from prostate enlargement. But sometimes the enlargement and the cancer can go together. And if you're coming in and you're having symptoms, then you definitely need to be screened. I mean, screened is typically for the asymptomatic patient, for men with no symptoms at all. But, and again, the family history is key. African-American men, 9/11, first responders, exposure to Agent Orange, certain lifestyle factors. I mean, we all have stress. I mean, you know, Dr. Rubin was talking about the relationship between, you know, chronic pain and depression. I mean, I think that's clear. And what's not as clear, perhaps, is the relationship between cancer development and stress. You know, I saw a number of men this past week diagnosed with prostate cancer, and they'd have no other known, you know, the known typical risk factors. But then when you talk to them and you listen to people, you say, well, you know, yes, I went through a divorce or I went through a very stressful time with my business last year. Otherwise, I'm healthy, but I did have a tremendous amount of stress. I mean, that has not been well established, that relationship. But I think that it is there. And, of course, diet is, in my mind, you know, men. And now it's becoming more and more people are researching it, that, you know, men that are overweight, that have more fat in the diet, that don't take daily vitamins. You know, we heard last week when Dr. Mike Roizen was on to talk about the benefits of taking a multivitamin, taking a fish oil if you're not eating salmon 3 or 4 times a week. These things can certainly help in reducing your risk. Well, that's the end of the show. I want to thank again my wonderful guest, Dr. Ed Rubin, who's the Director of Chronic Pain Management here at NYU Winthrop in Mineola. You can reach out and check him on the web, Dr. Ed Rubin. And, of course, all of our wonderful screening events coming up next month in September. That's the end of the show. I want to thank everyone for listening, tuning in. Have a great start of the day. Looks like it's, well, it's predicting rain, but right now it looks kind of nice out there. So let's go and get up and walk around and have a wonderful day. This is Dr. Aaron Katz.
WABC, New York.